position number 24198, room 4.
What were some of the sights that you were to see that spring out? Did you manage to go and see the pyramids, for instance?
Yes, only from a distance. I didn't worry about getting close to them. I never had a bothered to have a ride on a camel. Everyone seemed to want to have a ride on a camel. There were camels everywhere. But, no, I had to drink a lot of beer, I suppose. Forget any worries I had. I knew I had no worries about home. I wasn't married or anything like that. I had nothing to worry about there.
Do you think that you had worries possibly about whether you'd see home again?
Oh, yes, I did, often. As I say, looking forward to getting into action and hoping that there was nothing waiting to get rid of you kind of thing. Be lucky enough to come through it all.
Up until this time, the Italians had been the main, well, the enemy.
Mm.
And how has it seen in relation to the successes that have been experienced so far?
Well, I think the average soldier knew that more or less he had a contempt for Italian soldiers. We knew that they were not good fighters. They made good truck drivers. They were all right on artillery that was well behind the front line. There was front line troops. They never used to have the worries that we knew that we would get once we'd met German troops. They'd be a different kettle of fish. The Italian soldier actually was treated very harshly by his allies, the Germans. I never used to bother about him much.
How do you think the successes helped you to sort of cope with what you might experience?
To Brook, when we got to the Brook, I thought, well, mostly it was quite safe to walk around in daytime, daylight hours, because of the heat. You knew that no one could see you properly to take aim. Night time, most of the work used to be done with patrolling the areas. You could sleep all day if you wanted to. Night time, as I say, was the busiest part of the day.
We can talk about Tobruk in a little while. I'm interested to know the general feeling in relation to the enemy at this point, and in relation to how you thought the war was going.
Well, we used to listen to the British news at 7 o'clock at night, and that seemed to be all success, and whether it was a fact or not, we thought we must have been doing pretty well in the war. Jerry was getting high, according to the news we used to hear.
In relation to your further training, in preparation to go west up the desert, what were some of the main forms of training that you were experiencing? You mentioned just rifle fire, but were there any?
No. Just what we'd already learned.
So how would you describe the average day then in your camp and during the training period in the Middle East?
Just monotonous, I suppose. That's why we were making us anxious to do something else kind of thing. Same thing day after day, PT. Three meals a day, route march in the afternoon, and keeping fit.
What would you do in the evening when?
Well, most of them were in bed by 9 o'clock. Might have a game of cards or something like that. Just a humdrum sort of existence.
How are you seeing the officers in charge of you?
Well, we thought they were all enjoying themselves, the money, the wages they were on. They had their own bar and things like that. They never used to mingle with us once training was finished. There'd be an officer of the guard, he'd be in charge of the guard for the night. He'd be about the only officer that was on duty. The others could be in the bar or anything, same as us, in different bars.
Were there any officers that stuck out for you as popular officers?
Some troops had favoured different officers. Most of them we got on pretty well with. But you never got too close to an officer to strike up a conversation with him in ordinary language, but they were treated more or less above you kind of thing.
When, in relation to the people in higher command, obviously you wouldn't have had much chance to speak to them, but people like Wavell and Blaney, some of those people, how are they seen generally?
Never saw them kind of thing. The highest one that I suppose the average soldier would see would be his own commanding officer. The battalion officer, One Bottle Jack.
Tell us about him.
One Bottle Jack, he was a good officer, very well respected.
Why would you say that he was a good officer and well respected, do you think?
Well, he would, if he was on a tour of inspection, you happened to be on guard duty, you would show him his full honours as far as a salute. When he approached you, challenge him. If he thought that you'd made a good job of the challenging him, he'd tell you. If he thought, well, you didn't make such a good job, he'd tell you that too. But he would have a conversation with you. And just seemed to be a good man for anything, for troops to would do anything for him.
A man's man, someone that could talk to you.
Oh, like yes, you could talk to him. You could, if you were in trouble with anything and you thought you were getting a raw deal, you could always get the get your officer to make an appointment with him, and he would listen to you, what you had got yourself into, trouble, or the officer might have threatened you with trouble, but he would listen to your argument, and he would give a fair enough decision.
We're talking Jack Lloyd, and he'd been given his nickname. Tell us what you understand of the nickname that he'd been given.
Well, the way we heard it was that, well, it did happen too. He would always inspect troops going on leave to make sure that they, he would tell them to behave themselves. The people that we called wogs, his definition of it was that WOG stood for Worthy Oriental Gentlemen. And he said they have to be treated that way. I want them treated that way. And he would turn around and have his hands down by his side, and he would say about drink, I know that you're going to drink, you'll finish up getting drunk. And as soon as he saw his arm start to move, he knew it was coming. But whatever you do, cut it down one bottle. That's what all is. One bottle turned into six or seven or something.
So he'd emphasise it with his fist.
Yeah. Yeah.
In relation to how the average troop saw the Worthy Oriental Gentleman, would you say that they agreed with Lloyd on the whole?
Yes, we made it our business to meet them on even terms. The ones that didn't do that were very unpopular South African troops. South African troops were on our side, as everyone knows, but they had a hatred of, colour hatred around those years. And many a time we saw them belting what we call wogs up, and we'd hop in and help the wogs get them out of the danger, because we took a hatred against South African troops. We thought that they were overbearing, thought they were a cut above us, and we or set our time to try and prove to them that they weren't above us. They are very unpopular troops, South Africans. Matter of fact, we honestly used to think that they were on Germany's side when they went into the war, which I suppose was a foolish thought, but to never prove that they were.
Some people talk of the loss of Tobruk, blaming it on South Africans.
Yes. One thing that that's a good point to bring up, that when they lost Tobruk, they had all that gear there, modern gear, tanks, artillery and everything. They should have destroyed it. Instead of that, the Germans just walked in and it was all lined up for them to take over. And they use it against the troops coming after us.
Well, we'll talk about that later on when we get to that point. But when was it that you started to hear about the Germans? Because up until February, they hadn't really been taking any part in the war in North Africa. Rommel is landing late in Tripoli. Between the 12th and the 14th of February 1941. What was the general feeling then, knowing that the Germans were on their way?
Yeah, well, the feeling then, as far as Tobruk went, we knew that the Germans had several outposts in Tobruk. The Italians had more or less been withdrawn and Germans had taken over their positions. But I suppose the first German prisoner of war I saw, I thought, well, he's the same as what I am. There's not much bloody difference to what I am. He's got the reputation of being a good soldier. Well, he has to prove it first before he took that honour.
They did have that reputation of being
Better troops, better trained.
Fairer in combat too, do you think?
Yes, I think he could. The difference with them to the others was they give you a 50-50 chance, and whereas the others wouldn't. They'd if they had the upper ground, they'd use all their authority to make you look as small as they could.
People talk of your job of relieving the 6th Division that had been in the Western Desert, obviously, and was now being replaced by the 9th, going off to Greece. Do you recall the importance of Greece being mentioned, Mark?
No.
Churchill called places like Greece the underbelly of Europe, the weak underbelly. How was Churchill generally seen by the average Australian troop, do you think?
I'd say they thought Churchill was doing a good job, I suppose, as far as that went. Prime Minister, but the main worry, what seemed to be our worry all the time, was that we just couldn't seem to get any modern gear into our system. I remember even when they issued new revolvers to some of the officers, our officer took us down near the river one day and gave us all a chance to have a shot out of his revolver. And looking at it was just a revolver, a handgun, but he seemed to picture it as something different that he hadn't had before. Even officers didn't have good bloody gear. One of the best guns that came out of around our time was the Bren gun. So when you come to think of it, Bren gun was one to a platoon. Well, a platoon was about 35 men, and you got one quick firing bloody Bren gun to go between the 35 of them. Whereas Jerry, everyone would have a bloody quick firing gun per man. Just seemed to be, if we could have got the gear, in my opinion, we could have gone quicker in a lot of jobs that we took on, but we just couldn't do it.
Well, obviously, from the time that Rommel had arrived in Tripoli, that he was having success after success. It wasn't long before he was, as you mentioned, in Benghazi, April 4th, the Benghazi handicap. What was the general feeling of knowing that you were up against a more formidable force?
Well, everyone had it in their mind that they were going to get a thrashing at some part of it. But we couldn't see where we had any. It's a horrible sight to see ground troops waiting on the ground to see the enemy coming, and our own tanks going helter for skelter, going behind us, getting running through us to get out of the bloody road, getting chased, and we're supposed to stop the enemy as soon as he comes through there. Well, it doesn't work that bloody way. It's the opposite way to what should happen. Your tank should be there to, in front of you, to hold their position and protect you until you can get in position to hold the enemy. But we seem to do it back to front. Our tanks got out of the road, whereas Jerry's tanks seemed to be in the front, taking all the brunt of the attack and pushing us back so that their troops could take the ground that they were leaving behind them. I don't understand. Different generals, different ideas, I suppose.
In relation to some of the places that Rommel was taking, how did you see, or what did you know of the importance of Tobruk, do you think?
Well, my idea, or the average idea, I should think, that if you look at the map, and if Tobruk hadn't have been held with Jerry's push in the first place, the original push that started, the British troops and all the other troops went into Tobruk and started the siege. If they hadn't have held out there for 6 months, all the Middle East would have gone. They stopped. We don't know for sure how many men he had there, but we reckon we were outnumbered by about 2.5 to 1. So he must have had about 47,000 troops around holding Tobruk, holding us in there. But he waited 6 months before he could get the place, and in that 6 months he couldn't afford to go along with his army and leave Tobruk behind him because they could cut his supply lines. So he had to use up 47,000 men to surround Tobruk to stop him. If you look at the map, if Tobruk had fallen, he would have gone, taken the Suez Canal, gone right through there and been able to chop off Britain's supply line of oil, and I think the war would have finished pretty bloody quick on his terms then.
Well, we mentioned Tobruk. Up until Tobruk had been attacked, Benghazi had gone on the 4th of April, then Derna on the 7th of April, obviously coming down between the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th of April, the Germans are arriving and then on the 13th making an attack. What were your first impressions of Tobruk when you eventually got there yourself?
We got there at 8 in the afternoon, we arrived by a destroyer. The destroyers were the only boats that could keep the place going as far as bringing up food, ammunition, and all the goods, taking the wounded out. Yes, we took destroyers every night, we'd be on the trip up. They'd take it in turns somehow. They'd work a roster from Alexandria. We seem to think, well, as long as we can hold the brook, we're doing a good job.
Do you remember the general impression you had of Tobruk on your arrival?
Yes, I thought the quicker I could get out of here, the better off I'd feel.
Why did you feel that way?
Just hemmed in kind of thing. Everyone on tenterhooks. As I say, you could walk around in the daytime quite safe, but night time, I think most soldiers would say that they were a bundle of nerves waiting for daylight to come. You'd be sent out on patrol at night time. There's a listening patrol to see if Jerry was digging in any different places, trying to come in, move in.
We can talk about some of those duties that you were to receive later. Your impressions of the town itself, arriving the first time, what did it look like to you?
Just a few caves, a few houses, or ex-houses, and nothing else, kind of thing, just desert. It was an area of approximately, I suppose, 15 mile coastline that we held, and then furthest point out, I suppose, this post, be 12 miles.